same things are said. So in the last chapter, you've got like a kind of a trial scene and beatings and humiliation for Jesus. And then at the very end of the chapter, probably last week, you talked about Peter and his denial. And that, you sort of leave it like a cliffhanger, sad as possible ending. And then this week, oh, it's the same scene, kind of. At least it's the same feelings. And it's interesting. In the passage we do, like, we're going to do chapter 15, first 20 verses. And it's just Jesus against everybody. So you left Peter kind of like, oh, I did it, didn't I? And nobody comes back until verse, like, past where I'm going to be today. It's just Jesus against all of his accusers, which is kind of a hard scene. So let's find my bookmark, right? In the first verse, very early in the morning, the chief priests with the elders, the teachers of the law, and the whole Sanhedrin reached a decision. They bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. It's the whole crew. It's everybody, and then everybody they could think of to bring that had any kind of power in this region. It's all the bosses and the sub-bosses and the guys that helped the bosses, and they're all, and it looks like none of them slept. This is what my brother-in-law would call, they got up at zero dark early to get on with their plans. And their plan was to take Jesus to Pilate. And I think it's interesting, they bound him. And I'm like, well, wasn't he bound already? Didn't we do a whole chapter where he was kind of already under arrest? I think what they're trying to do here is humiliate him further. It's not like they think he's going to bust free. It's more humiliating to travel tied up. I think that's the first time we see it in the scene, and that's it kind of becomes a sub-theme, maybe, is the humiliation. Because it only gets worse from here. And you'll have noticed in Mark, it's just so quick. Every scene, the scene changes are quick, everything's quick. Often you'll have in English the word immediately, and immediately, and immediately, and immediately. So Mark's, you sort of feel like he's left things out sometimes. Like, I would have been interested to hear more about it, but he's just next. John has the same story, and maybe you're more familiar with that at Easter. You'll hear the discussion that Jesus and Pilate have. In this exchange in Mark, they exchange 9 words between the two of them. It's all, maybe Mark knew. Well, John's writing this anyway. I'll just give you the short version. I don't know. Maybe they never met. I don't know. Don't quote me on that part. In verse 2, Pilate asks, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And it's kind of a summary statement, I think, actually, of all the accusations that are coming. Pilate says, okay, let's just cut to the chase. Do you say that you're the king of the Jews? And Jesus' answer is very interesting. He's like, well, you said it. And a few times when I was preparing, I heard in my head, it's like, you said it, brother. But he didn't, but that's how I heard it. Because I think it's, he kind of leaves it that way. You're not sure. It's like, well, that wasn't no, and it wasn't yes, but he's kind of put it back to, you're the one that said it. It wasn't my idea. They unpack that in John, but not in Mark. But it brings the undercurrent of political concern. Pilate's a politician. All of his concerns are political. In this passage and otherwise, that's kind of his whole life. He sort of doesn't care what the Jews think at all, and sort of don't care what they think about Jesus. Because, like, well, does this affect my re-election campaign? Then I don't care. He's just indifferent, I think, maybe at best. Anyway, Mark keeps it short and sweet. He doesn't even tell us what Pilate thinks of the answer. He just carries on into verse 3 and 4, which is back to the high priests. accusing Jesus of many things. So again, Pilate asks him, "Aren't you going to answer? See how many things they are accusing you of." He doesn't elaborate, Mark. Actually doesn't tell us in the verses here what the accusations are. They've already been talked about, I guess, so no sense rehashing. If you only have 8 feet of parchment, I don't want to use it up because I'm getting to the last 8 inches. So, but there's an abundance of accusing going on. It's gone on for a while, is the sense that we get. And Pilate says, "You really got nothing to say to this? Like, it's not parking tickets. These guys have got some serious things on their mind, and you're just sitting there. You really got nothing to say." He's amazed, is the word that's used in verse 5, that he has nothing to say. I'm like, well, if you're going to say something, this would be the time, buddy. He's the guy that can make something happen. He's the guy to convince. You're like, if you can convince Pilate, you bought time, because he's the one that says, look, the rest of you guys, just get out and this guy can go free. And I said so, and I'm going to watch him. That could have happened. Pilate's got that kind of power. That scene could have taken place. It actually reminds me of Paul in later on in the letters. He gets arrested, comes to trial. He's like, so is this how you treat Roman citizens? And the guy freaks out. He's like, I didn't realize you were Roman. But that's who, he could have played that card. It could have happened, but it didn't. Jesus says, nothing. Verse 6. Now it was the custom at the feast to release a prisoner whom the people requested. A man named Barabbas was in prison with the insurrectionists. This part's probably in brackets, hey? A man named Barabbas was in prison with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the uprising. And then the close brackets. The crowd came up and asked Pilate to do for them what he usually did. There are so many questions coming out of these verses. Let's start with, okay, there's this custom that Pilate releases a prisoner. So let that sink in. They are an occupied territory. It's been long enough that it's tradition to ask Pilate to release a prisoner. This is kind of a regular thing. This isn't the first time they've done it. This is what they all expect is going to happen. It's the morning. There's already crowds. They've come because this is the morning we ask Pilate to set somebody free. And like, this is a brutal world of martial law, and he's the guy. But this is his chance to become like, I'm benevolent. I have given you this man's life. Maybe he's not such a bad guy after all. He gets a little bit of like, you know, for himself, just like, I am the hand of justice and mercy. Maybe he sounds like that. I think he does. A little bit. I think he enjoyed that feeling. They're like, I have enough power to do this bad thing or a good thing. I will grant the mob a request once a year. Most of my questions come around Barabbas, which Mark doesn't tell us, but we see other places. Barabbas is his nickname, right? That's not his given name. His nickname's Jesus, which is interesting. You might want to put a pin in that. But his name's Barabbas, which I looked for and I couldn't find. You're like, wow, maybe there's some big things to unpack. I'm like, not really. He's just a guy. But remember, we're talking about Pilate. They're coming to Pilate, whose only motivations are political. And by the way, there's this revolutionary in prison, which already, I'm like, wouldn't the Romans have just stepped on that? How is he even still alive to be in prison? But he is, and not alone. There's a bunch of them. And they've killed people. It doesn't say they're accused of murders. It says he's with the murderers, the insurrectionists who had committed murder in the uprising. So I don't know if this is just the cue. This is where they box them up before they crucify them all in a big row all at once. I don't, maybe. But it's surprising to me, like, this guy, probably, you could have reasonably expected he's already dead, but here he is, on hand, for being released. We don't know if Mark did this on purpose, but it's almost too good not to notice that the one who's accused of crimes and actually did them, the sinner, the biggest sinner around, the crowd asks for him, and he's released instead of Jesus, the sinless one. The crowd and Pilate agree that the sinner goes free and Jesus is going to die for him. Jesus dies in his place. And Barabbas and I are not really that different. The details are different, but I don't think inside which of us lived a perfect life. And Jesus trades his life for mine without complaint or argument. He willingly carries on, knowing how terrible things are going to get. The chief priests stirred up the crowds to have Pilate release Barabbas instead. Did they plan that all along? Was that part of what they were talking about at 2 in the morning? Or is it just, like, did they pick the guy because his name's also Jesus? And, like, not that Jesus, I want that one. And it's like, oh, opposite ones. Or was his brother a high priest? Like, who knows? We don't know why. Was there a plan? Was it just lucky for Barry that his name was similar enough? We don't know. Instead, the man who tries to overthrow the Roman leadership, it's super ironic. So they've come, and Pilate in this verse is asking in 12, what do you think I should do? Sorry, that was a paraphrase. What shall I do then with the one you call the King of the Jews? He's literally called the King of the Jews. And again, Pilate's only about politics. If this guy's actually the King of the Jews, he would have known about it, and I think he has known about the rumors. But he's like, this isn't a credible threat to overthrowing what I've got going on. But in three times in these verses, Pilate calls him King of the Jews. And he's pushing back. You're like, really? You want Barabbas instead of this guy? It's like he's looking for a chance to be like, I don't really want to do this. I don't want to let Barabbas go. And I don't really want this guy to be on the hook for it. Are you sure this is what you want? And I think he's pointing to, it's a bit ridiculous. Like, we all know this guy isn't really your king. He's drawing attention to the fact that it's like, come on, you guys. He's actually kind of pitiful. He's all beaten and bloody already. He's not a threat. He's playing to the mob's sense of pity. This beaten wretch can't really be a king. What do you think I should do with this poor guy? The one you call the King of the Jews, he asks. Now, it's also a clue about Pilate being a little concerned for his own safety. The mob's getting a little heated, and maybe if he pushes back too hard, then they turn against him. It seems odd that the boss of the region is going to give up something to the rabble at his gate. Jesus hasn't done anything Pilate considers serious, and he's looking for a way to spring him loose. But when they start shouting in verse 13, crucify him, you know, like the political tensions are a little hot because they're an oppressed. It's not like I'm down the street in Rome where everything's handy and nothing, no bad can come. He's still on the boundaries. He's right at the edge of the barbarian front. So you don't want to push too hard. It hasn't really taken a lot to rouse the rabble into getting a little bay for blood happening. But the mob isn't interested in a peaceful solution. Mobs don't really roll that way. they latch on to the wishes of the leaders and start calling for an innocent man to be tortured to death. Crucifixion's painful on purpose. It's designed to put down rebellions. It's ironic. The crowd asks for the rebel to be freed and then condemns another man to be punishment for the rebels. But when Pilate says why, what has he done? It isn't about the crime, and it never has been. That stayed? Good. Now the crowd is wound up. It's about the mob threatening violence and a political provincial governor willing to trade the life of one man for another day of peace. Pilate has literally proclaimed the innocence of Jesus to the crowd. The crowd insists that he should be killed. In verse 15, if you didn't have any other reason to be disappointed in Pilate, this is enough. Mark's condemning phrase, wanting to satisfy the crowds, is enough to discredit him as a leader. He's more interested in public favor than he is in justice. Pilate got peer pressured into having a man flogged and killed. Not really what you want to be remembered for, but he is. Too bad, fella. You could have done better. So we've had two scenes in these 20 verses. We start with Jesus with the Jewish leaders for the first, verse. But then he's with Pilate. In verses 16 to 20, he's with the soldiers. The scene changes at verse 16. And it actually goes from bad to worse. And I get the impression this isn't, when I was reading it, I got the impression this isn't something the soldiers did particularly for Jesus. It felt like more like, no, this is what we do with prisoners. Part of being a prisoner is to be humiliated. And they go out of their way to do that. They call all the guys. It says they called together the whole company of soldiers. They put a purple robe on him, they twisted together a crown of thorns, and set it on him. I didn't know or remember this, but it's soldiers. The verb I want is create. Weave, that's the word. They weave the wreath and put it on the new emperor's head. It's the soldiers that crown the Roman emperor. The irony is thick already here. It's the soldiers that are wrapping this wreath of thorns to put on Jesus' head and mock him. Hey guys, they're calling him the King of the Jews. What do you say we make up a wreath? Let's make it scratchy and harsh. It's actually a bit disappointing to think that humanity gets that low, that this is, hey guys, why don't we do this? It'll be fun. Oh, it makes you want to cry. They've been hearing the crowds, and they know. It'll be more humiliating if we, mock him about being a king. And they salute him. And the words are correct, but the meaning's broken. If you're the King of the Jews, and you don't amount to much, maybe they don't either. Hail, King of the Jews! But it's meant to hurt rather than honor. And whoever thought up sticks and stones may break my bones, that verse, I don't think they ever had anyone say something mean to them, because it, really, it doesn't work. I've tried that. And then it makes a difference what you say to people. And these soldiers are generous with their hitting and spitting and name-calling, and they kneel down to pay their respects, but it only reinforces their disrespect. And then, as this is how Mark rolls, and then, when they had mocked him, they took off the purple robe and put on his own clothes on him. Then they led him out to crucify him. Mark's like all business. If you get the computer voice to read Mark, it fits. It's like, and then they took him out and crucified him. Like, there's no emotion. It's just facts. It was part of the workday. The soldiers change him back into his own clothes and lead him off to be crucified. And I remember, to be fair to Mark, maybe he did it on purpose. I talked to a guy once, because I don't know anything about art, but he was telling me about, well, black and white photography is a totally different cat, because without the color, then you get to see the contrast of this and this, and I understood it when he said it, and I still don't, I don't think I see what he sees, but to have it kind of stark, then you get like, okay, this is just the clearest picture I can of what's happening. Pilot gets close to the idea, but he couldn't quite grasp it. The idea that Jesus really is the king, just not in a way that Pilate could understand. The one who has come to save us did not come in power or political strength or with a mighty army. He came as a child, lived as a poor man, and died as a criminal. But his life and death are not meaningless. Spoiler alert, I think most of you read to the end, but next week's even sadder. But the end of the story is much, much better. His life showed us how to live. His death shows us that our sins are paid. When the righteous, sinless Son of God, the innocent one, died for all of us who are sinful, his death covers all our sins, all the sins of all of us. The thing that kept us apart from a holy God are washed clean. And we can come boldly into the presence of God, knowing that the holiness of our brother Jesus has made it possible for us to be treated as clean and holy. The one who stood accused in Mark 15 and said nothing now stands at the right hand of God and speaks for you. When you encounter a difficult passage like this one, with the violence and the abuse, take comfort in knowing that Jesus stands now at the right hand of God and advocates for you and me. His suffering was not for nothing. It was for you.